Yes, I'm sorry Helen can't be here, but I've worked with her for the last 7 years on a number of different projects. So what we were really trying to do in this session was try and bring forward some of that experience. So I've been in contact with her to make sure that the presentation reflects it. So I'll try and be Helen. And I think a lot of people here have been at the point where they say, great, we've got FIDR adoption signed up. You know, we've got the business case, we've got everyone behind us, we're now going to go. It's all going to be easy from here on in. And the answer is that getting that first stage is really just the end of the beginning. And I wanted to, you know, maybe some of these questions will resonate with you, but typically what we find is when people have joined up with IDA, you tend to get a very small group of people who've driven it through the organization. And then you hit technology, and I hear enterprise architects say, why do we need another ID? We've already got IDs. Or, you know, it's not on our roadmap, that we have no resources to be able to integrate this. And some of that is not invented here. Some of that is really just very much a silo mentality looking within the organization saying, it worked for me, and they don't really understand the ecosystem picture. So for operations, you find that, you know, when you've been involved with IDA for a while, you understand the bigger picture. But if your job is just to get stuff out the door, and today you're using a spreadsheet to do that, you don't really understand why it's important. And we've seen implementations run into the sand where the actual people doing the hard work, the heavy lifting, stop working. And they just say to their management, it's too difficult, I can't use it. And what we need to do here is make sure that we're listening to them and incorporating those changes into the next generation of IDA. But it's also tactically how you get over that, how you bridge that gap. And Helen did this at ITV, where she kind of stepped into the operations side, and she was doing a lot of the wrangling of the data and making sure that data was correct. Because the range of expertise you sometimes need to, that where people slow down with IDA, we found, is sourcing the data. So again, I don't know if this is common for you across here, but it's people will create enough data to get it out into the next silo, and then once they've done that piece, it doesn't persist. So with the BBC, for example, finding the data for the rights, which is some of the data you need for the minimum IDA data set, combining with what goes into BPG, getting those two systems, getting access to those two systems, is quite tricky. But I think the most important thing here, and the board alluded to this, is why are people using IDA? And we can all of us here, because we understand IDA, we turned up for the day, understand the technical evidence and the potential future it has. But unless it actually does something, unless it makes the boat go faster today, you're not going to get commercial take up. And you know, I've come across a number of issues with this. You know, people concerned about sharing their secrets, publishing their metadata outside the organization. Or you know, they're worried that they would rather put that effort into another sales head rather than cleaning up this data. And when you look at IDA, it's although the data is good, and it's stable, as Bill said, it's a 10-year-old system. And so there's an amount of technical debt. There's a lot of difficulty in trying to get, for example, the command line tools working on Windows. So these are all things that I think are going to hold you up. And it's making sure that when you launch into IDA and do these implementations, you're aware of some of these challenges. Don't just assume that everyone's going to see the same light at the end of the tunnel. So jumping into ITV, and I don't know if everyone's familiar with ITV, but it's a major public broadcaster in the UK, and it has is commercially funded with a lot of advertising revenue. And what the last CEO, Adam Crozier, did was embark on an acquisition spree, going around and buying production capacity around the world. And that's because he wanted to get away from the cyclical dependency on advertising revenues and buy into content. And I think that's quite a smart move. Now, he's moved on now, and there's a new CEO, Carolyn McCall, who came from EasyJet. And so what I've just highlighted here is she's talked quite widely about more than TV and her strategy. And I think what's important, if I look at ITV as a model, is, and they've been a very, they've been a board member of IDA, they've put a massive investment into it, but it's important to make sure that their strategy aligns with the principles underlying IDA. So you can see from this Morgan TV strategy that what Karen is promoting is the idea of taking their advertising, which today is classic linear TV advertising, and addressing consumers much more directly. And so that's reliant on a lot of analytics, a lot of data management. and as well as making sure they understand where their content is being shown. So this is an example for me where the content universe that ITV is touching, what, you know, what they're trying to cover, is quite large. If you look at it from the point of view of just a data scavenge across the organisation, there's probably 850,000 different things they think they've got. Now, when you actually look at what's been registered, there's 115,000. And Helen says that, you know, what she's done is she's worked on the active library. There's quite a lot of old content that is never going to be used. For example, weather or news or some a soap opera from the 1970s like Crossroads. It really doesn't have much commercial value, so why touch it? But if you look at where they are in terms of their coverage, they're probably about halfway there in terms of completeness. And this is one of the statistics that I think is quite, at the moment it's not evident from the database, but it's something that would be really good to get from all the organisations, all the either members, which is, again, what Bill talked about, which is about completeness. It's not just about the absolute number of registrations, but about whether that is the quantum, whether you're close to 95%. So the statistics I've heard is that we're 98% there on cinema, but only, you know, we're not anywhere near that on TV. But where ITV have gone is they've gone very well on episodes. What's interesting here also, and it'd be good to for you to look in your organisations, look at the ratio of versions to episodes. So intuitively you'd say for every episode there will be many different versions. I've been doing some work on IMF, and looking at someone like an HBO, they've got 25 international versions, or Vice, there are many different versions being created. And yet when you look at the ratio here, we're seeing that there's only about 50% of the registrations have a version created for them. So that should be, I think, something like 3 or 4 versions for every episode. And I don't know if that resonates with you, but there should be more versions being collected. So for me, I've got, you know, ITV being green on the series, season, and episodes, but amber on the versions. There's still some more work left to do. And if you look at the typical data load pattern, and again, you know, a lot of you have embarked on an either implementation or you've got to a mature state with it. But what you tend to find is a profile that is going to vary by organisation. You tend to see this initial testing, and to be honest, this first year year one and year two was, and I was heavily engaged in ITV at that stage were the biggest sponsor, the biggest promoter of ISAM, and they were doing the most registrations on ISAM. And so this was the internal discussion about how they moved off ISAM and onto ILA. So we had a spate of registrations to prove it, then there was a protracted negotiation, and then you can see they start to spike up. Now, what Helen has done is then, working with the teams, has done the kind of the premium catalogue and then established the steady state registrations. So you can see there that profile of a set of big registrations, and then we're into steady state. So what I expect to see going on the following years is maybe some other bulk loads, and then basically the steady state will track the number of versions. But again, on this chart, it'd be really good to be able to say, is this, well, we know that this for ITV, they're doing this at the point of acquisition and commissioning. We know this is complete, but to be able to have a sign saying, is this the same, is this tracking everything that's coming out of the organisation? And someone like a Disney, have got so many different channels they're sending out across. What's the percentage completeness we've got? Because there is the network effect here. If you've got critical mass, if you've got everything you need within this feed, then you can start to rely on it as a piece of data. If you haven't got that full coverage and people are having to stop their workflow process and try and fill in the gaps, it's always going to get people thinking about not pursuing it. Now, I take Sony as well. These are just the numbers from the registry database. You see another profile here, which is a big load of data. And then you kind of got to a steady state. Now, I think the other piece here, which isn't shown in the numbers, is Sony is also tracking some competitive content, so it's not just the production output from Sony that's being registered on this point. And I'd like to also just kind of draw attention here to Global Eagle and BFI. So when BFI did the mapping of their filmography, the UK filmography, they found that 80% of it was already matched, or was a match rather than register. So a lot of it had already been shown on US cable, and therefore had already been registered. Now, BFI today have already done this around their cinema, around the film. They haven't yet tackled TV, but they have a statutory responsibility to do TV, so they're going to now extend that out across TV. If you look at Global Eagle, and I don't know if anyone's familiar here with Global Eagle, but they probably deal with about 70% of the content that's in the air when you're flying and you're watching movies. And it's unless you've been worked in an IFE, and I spent 18 months helping with their cloud platforms, you don't understand how proprietary and how antiquated some of the systems are that fly on a plane. Once you put a system on a plane, it doesn't tend to get changed out. You know, you can't have the plane on the ground, it's too expensive to rip it out. So you'll have a range of planes with some AV equipment that's 25 years old that's still using metal cassettes to upload the films onto the plane. But when they were embarked on this, they had a lot of Middle East edits. So they have now matched their catalogue with about 50,000 items in the catalogue, but only about 12,000 new registrations. So I think it's important for, you know, as you go out and talk to other people in the ecosystem, when you're talking to other suppliers or partners, is to explain some of these cultural challenges and help them understand what they're likely to run into when you're doing an IDRA implementation. I'd also say that there's a great deal of ambition around IDRA registrations, but it's the old adage of crawl, walk, run. So starting off with the first program strand, and although it's intuitive, when you've been working with IDRA and TV anytime before that, metadata for 15 years, you understand its attributes, but for many other people in the business team, they're not going to understand why it's important until they see it. So getting that first program strand as an example that is fully worked, that you can use as kind of a poster child of the organization, I think it's very important. And then extending that out to a delivery, because having this as a perfectly polished internal ontology and a set of data that everyone can look at is architecturally elegant, is great, but it's not going to get the commercial juices flowing unless you've got the delivery and you've got some customer or a supplier asking for it. And then, as Helen has at ITV, get the full catalogue, get everything that's worth anything. And the analogy I'd give here, I mean, if you look at what she's now working on, there's been pallet loads of tapes from when they've gone from one outsourced supplier coming across to another. There's been pallet loads of tapes, huge rafts of data. If you try and boil the ocean, you try and tackle all the legacy data issues, you're never going to win. You're never going to get there. And the aim here is to try and make it native, to try and get that IDRA's being the default option, and also something that everyone in the organisation, both technical, operational, and commercial, consider as their default position. And in fact, when you look at ITV, what they're now doing is they're registering at the point of production. The next piece we're looking at is EPG listings, so that you can actually, and so 15 years ago I was working for Red B, I was doing all the metadata for ITV. We published an ID that went out in the transmissions scheme, I think called EIT Now Next, and that was able to help you do the set-top box recording. And this is where hopefully IDRA will be persisted out through this. I also spent some time working with BARM, and they have a project Dovetail where they're combining the measurement of the VOD and the linear playout. And so these are all kind of use cases which are going to be extended out. So right now, the main use of IDRA within ITV is just getting the catalogue straight. What we're hopefully going to start seeing is some of this data persisting out into different channels. And again, it'd be very useful for IDRA to get the feedback from you about where IDRA is getting to and how it's being used. Because unless it has a value outside of the idea that it's a clean set of schema, we're not going to get traction. Here's another example, other people's data. So when Helen came to register, she basically hit previous registrations that had been done on the wrong level. That's now been cleaned up, but you are going to find that increasingly as you start tripping over other people's registrations. Okay, so basically what had happened was someone had inadvertently registered at series level and season level. So the proper structure you can see here is There's a series called Above Suspicion, and then there's a Set of Seasons. They'd registered both at both levels, so it was just wrong data, so that had to be cleaned up. Now, I was going to try and get a show of hands here. If you look at this set of people, I think this is what you need to be supporting either within the organisation. And I'm not sure if you looked across the room here, can you say for certain that in everyone doing an IDA implementation that the exec sponsor is fully aware of what the impact of IDA is going to be? Do you have the commercial leads involved? In my experience, this isn't being tackled as a question, but it'd be, again, good to find out from you as an organisation for us to say, you know, have the business cases been fully shared? Are people using this data in the right way? But you need to make sure that you've got knowledge and awareness and understanding of IDA across all of those people. And I stole this shamelessly from McKinsey, but this is applied to blockchain, but I think it's also a very good checklist to say, within the organisation, is there recognition that there's a problem? Is there a clear business case? And quite often we see an evangelist drive IDA forward, but it doesn't necessarily map into a proper use case. And there's also got to be an understanding that disruption isn't good for everybody. So when you're talking to a group where you've got 350 people doing some content workflow and you think you can do it with 150 people, that isn't good news for all those people. Another example on localization here where, you know, this is with Global Eagle, where it was using getting the title and picking the right data to be able to map for localization. But I think the key thing here is that we're seeing a big change here. The TV industry has been quite comfortable for a while and it's now under threat. And a lot of the new platforms that are out there are using automation to drive their audience. And without something like IDA, it's very difficult. They obviously need the consumer identity, you need the device identity, but you need a content identity to be able to build this automation properly. So, very briefly, when you look at the lessons learned, it's not now, I think, just about technology and standards. You need to identify the dream team, you need to have the business case to drive the cultural change, and you need to make sure that you are persisting IDA out through the ecosystem. I think IDA is a very small staff of people. It's very difficult for IDA to carry all that load. I think we need you to help us to identify what that ecosystem, who those partners are, to help us try and make sure that IDA is going end to end in the ecosystem. Thanks, all.
Good. Thank you, Ben.